You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, thanks so much for coming with me to Corpus Christi today on that crime scene. I know it was a little bit long. I had some interviews I had to do and had to do that site inspection, but I just really appreciate you coming with me on the drive.
Well, I enjoyed the conversation, and the scenery was beautiful, actually.
No, it is. It's nice. And taking a look at that bay, which I thought was the Gulf, so it was my first time to Corpus Christi, so it was very interesting. And I'm really enjoying sitting out here on the porch, and we got the lights turned down and our oak trees all out in the back, and we've got the screen room in, so we've don't have any bugs to bother us, and we can just sit out here in the nice weather, and it's just pitch black outside except for the lights on the trees, and it's just beautiful.
And what you might not have seen is that our daughter-in-law went to the bakery and brought some cookies for us.
Well, I'm absolutely looking forward to having one of those cookies in a few minutes.
Well, sometimes the discussion I want to have with you is something that has really been niggling me kind of for a lot, you know, as opposed to other things. So there's so much in the news right now. And there's so many things that we could talk about. But this one seems to kind of be on my mind, so I'm going to bring it up.
Okay, I'm sure you will.
What's bothering me is that our former President Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry and others in the past administration are really spending a lot of time criticizing our president. And this is really unprecedented in history. Don't believe George Bush did this to President Obama when he left office. He left him alone, and he didn't spend his time criticizing him.
And, you know, we just had some friends over from California, and they had a conference in San Antonio, and George Bush came and gave a speech at the conference, and that question came up. You know, how come you don't do anything to criticize? You didn't criticize Obama, and you didn't, you know, you don't criticize Trump, even though we know he's not a fan of Donald Trump. And he said, you know what? That's not the place of a former president to criticize the commander-in-chief. He said, you may not like who the commander-in-chief is, but you must respect the office. And as a former president of the United States who's been in the hot seat, he knows what it's like. And so he's going to let President Trump do his national policy and his international policy, and he's not going to interfere, unlike President Obama. So I just think it's just a no-class thing on all those people.
Well, I do too. And I kind of, you know, have an idea of all the times that he has been criticizing President Trump, and it's really on everything that he does. I mean, there's really nothing that President Trump can do right.
No, he just can't get a break.
No. So he's been criticized by President Obama and Michelle Obama on the wall, on school lunches, on the Paris climate withdrawal, on Obamacare, on DACA, on women voting for President Trump instead of Hillary.
North Korea and the Iran, right? The
exactly.
Iran nuclear agreement.
All those things. So there's really nothing that he's done that's been right. Although, personally, I agree with all these things that President Trump has done.
Well, me too.
But it's really frustrating to see, because it really is divisive. And Michelle Obama called President Trump a bad parent. She likened President Trump to a bad parent where her husband was the good parent in taking care of the country. And I really resent that analogy because it's so untrue. And I really see President Trump just going forward and doing what he said he was going to do, and he's kind of got blinders on to everything else, and he's going forward, he's doing the things he said. And to have all of this criticism from former members of the administration just is really frustrating. And what really kind of got to me today is that two of the former Obama administration officials suggested to our European allies that they deport our diplomats.
That's ridiculous.
It is.
That's just
it's
insane.
Totally ridiculous.
It's just insane.
Yeah, so they want President Trump to be punished over this whole Iran deal that he's backing out of. And why must they butt in? Their time is over. It's President Trump's time now. He's trying to do a better thing for the country, and they are going over there just really stabbing him in the back.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is this. That was a lousy deal. You remember, I didn't like it from the first.
Nor did I.
Okay, and they basically tried to buy these guys off. They gave them $158 billion in cash. My God, untraceable bills.
Which, excuse me, by the way, where is that money?
Oh, it's all gone.
Did it do anything to make people's lives better?
That's the point, okay. Right? They took $158 billion and did nothing for the Iranian people.
Right.
Okay, yet they did everything for the terrorists, right? So, you know, their nuclear arms program is going full tilt, despite what they told us. The Israelis, the Mossad, their version of the CIA, produced a whole bunch of documents showing that the Iranians had been lying the whole time. And, you know, we know, having traveled in Europe, and we're going back again this year, and, you know, being in Mexico, that by and large, the people in those countries have so much more respect for the United States of America now because they know that we have a strong president.
Right, and we're keeping our word, and we're meaning what we say. And when we make a red line, we stick to that red line.
Exactly.
But the thing that makes me sad about the Iran, about the money that we gave them, it didn't help the people, but their military spending has gone up tremendously. So that's where the money went, instead of to the people.
Right, and that's exactly right. And, you know, I think personally we blew it a few years ago during the spring, remember?
Yes.
The Arab Spring.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the Iranian people were rising up against the Ayatollahs, and we did absolutely nothing to assist them. Now, we didn't have to do stuff militarily. I don't want us to do something militarily. But we didn't do anything to help fund the counter-revolution. Right, we didn't do anything to help those people whatsoever, and of course the military, you know, and the guard, the Republican Guard, put that down. Yeah. Right, and we wasted that beautiful opportunity. But I'll tell you what, we've got a new opportunity coming up with Trump saying no to the Iran nuclear deal, and I think that's where we need to go. And I think those countries in Europe that have been supporting Iran for their own economies need to remember who their real friends are and who really constitutes a nation that is a terrorist nation and a destabilizing nation in the Middle East.
And they need to remember that we as Americans voted this president in because we wanted his agenda, and that the people that are going around from the other administration and talking badly about our new administration, they need to go away, and our allies need to not pay attention. Although, I really do see that President Trump is making some really good inroads with allies, and I'm really pleased to see that, because people that I thought wouldn't like him are really liking him.
Well, I think succinctly, he says he's going to do something, and he goes ahead and does it. And, you know, the only criticism that I would have right now, because you know me, I'm far from some Kool-Aid drinker, is that he allowed the Republicans and the Democrats, mostly the Republicans, by the way, to talk him in to the omnibus package, right? And he said right after he signed that, he regretted that, and he said he'll never do it again. So I hope he's going to be, just like the other things he's done, he's going to be good for his word.
Yeah. Well, I just want the other people to butt out. Oh, so seeing this, talking about politicians here, there was a new mayor elected in the town of Sharpsburg, North Carolina. He won by 7 votes. And
a tight race.
A tight race.
Right down to the wire.
And within an hour of when the polls closed, he was seen by police officers kind of driving a little bit, you know, squiggly on the street there. And he was stopped, and he was ultimately arrested for DUI.
Wait a minute. That's just celebrating.
Yes.
Celebrating the victory.
Well, in addition to that, there was a little bit of failure to stop and resisting arrest.
A little bit of that.
And possession of a firearm. which he was not authorized to have. So I think
you can't make this stuff.
I know. And sometimes I think we need to really think about who we are voting for, because this does not bode well for him.
Oh, probably going to be a recall election. Hey, I've got a bone to pick with the oversight panel for the Los Angeles Police Department, okay? Because just the other day, they had an officer-involved shooting, ended up being a fatal shooting, and the oversight panel took the cops to task for shooting this guy. And I just wanted to run a little bit of the fact pattern.
Yeah, let me
past
hear this.
You. And so this happened in Sunland, you know, in Los Angeles County. And we know, you know, Sunland's not, some places in Sunland are not the very best places around. But anyway, so there's a guy, he's 29 years old, and his name's Anthony Soderberg. And he breaks into this poor woman's house, and she has firearms in the house, okay? So she's got a rifle, she's got a shotgun, she's got a pistol, not unlike a lot of other houses that's there. But anyway, he basically gets in there, terrorizes her, gets access to guns, and she manages to jump out of the window, thank God.
Oh, good for her.
And escape. And of course, the police are called, and LAPD gets out there, and they call their SWAT team out there. And to make a long story short, the guy basically barricades himself inside the house. So you've got a barricaded, armed suspect. And by the way, this was on the high ground. So tactically, you know, the police are at an extreme disadvantage
right.
whenever a suspect has the high ground, and he's barricaded, and he's got a long gun with him. So anyway, they wanted what we call an elevated platform, which is a helicopter. So they took a couple of snipers and observers and put them up in the helo, and they're doing aerials, which means, you know, circles at about 500 feet. Well, they introduced tear gas into the house and forced the guy out, but he comes out of the house armed and starts shooting at the helicopter.
Where right? there are officers in the helicopter.
In the helicopter,
of course.
And of course the helicopter could crash, right? A lot of different
absolutely.
Things that could happen. Well, so the armed officers, because they've got a viable threat, by the way, 40 rounds are fired, okay? This guy is just going berserk
well,
with this
gun
helicopter.
Battle.
It is a gun battle. And they dump this guy, okay? So they shoot him and they kill him. And after a review by the Civilian Oversight Committee, they recommend discipline against 12 of the officers for violating the department's use of force policy. Okay, now I have to tell you, having done work with LAPD and actually having been trained by LAPD and their Force Investigations Division, I can't think of a single policy that these officers violated with respect to deadly force.
Well, before it gets to the civilian board, doesn't it go through Chief Beck? And what did Chief Beck say about this?
Well, Chief Beck is in abeyance, but he actually supported his guys. And, you know, thank God. But don't forget, it's an oversight committee. So, you know, Chief Beck stood behind his officers, but the civilian oversight is against him. Right?
Well, this brings to mind, I'm not a person that's totally in favor of civilian oversight because they are not trained in police practices. They are not trained in all the things that officers need to know and do. They don't have the experience of having to do these split-second decisions on the spot, under stress, day in and day out. And it's like, to me, it's like being a backseat driver a lot of times. And I understand why they want to have these civilian boards sometimes, but I don't think that that is the best idea. And here's a perfect example that you just stated here, that they really second-guessed everything these guys did. They don't understand all the reasons why what they did wasn't the wrong thing to do.
Well, you remember I used to be the independent investigator. I worked out of a mayor's office for a large town in Southern California, and I did that job for 4 years. And so my job was to take a look at just two things, officer-involved shootings and in-custody deaths. You remember that when
yes,
I was doing
sure.
that? And of course, I'm reporting back to the Civilian Oversight Committee in that large city. And I have to tell you that there's unpacking this bag, and that's exactly what it is. It's baggage is what it is. Because, you know, you want to know what the vetting process is for these people that come into these civilian review boards, right? And you want to train them, and you want to test them, and you want to make sure you do a good background on these people, because some people have an animosity towards the police. They've got a bone to pick for the police, sure. And they want to get on these commissions. And there has to be a good background check. There has to be a good vetting process. There has to be really good training in police practices. You got to put them through scenarios. You got to see what their critical decision-making skills are, and you want to check them for what we refer to as implicit bias and confirmation bias, right? And I mean, they're not talking about this decision right now because it was closed door, which is something that also bothers me. If it's a civilian oversight committee, we should be able to know how they're making their decisions. And that's what I want to know. How did you figure that these officers violated the departmental policy when the guy that's the chief of police, who is the guy that either writes or approves policy, endorses it, is saying that his officers did nothing wrong?
Well, and that's the question. And these are coming, there's more and more cities that are putting these civilian oversight boards in. And it's the same question. All the questions that you just mentioned are the same questions in all those cities, is what kind of training do they have? What kind of experience do they have to know really if these were the right or wrong decisions? And I love how people just constantly put themselves in that place of an officer who's making those split-second decisions day in and day out in their life. And 99% of the time, those decisions don't involve any kind of deadly force. They just are decisions that they have to make one way or the other all day. These people don't have to do it, and they backseat drive, and they make a decision that affects these people's lives when all that they were doing was protecting lives at the time that they were doing it.
And you know, I've done some scenarios with the mainstream media. You know, they've been invited out to our range, and we've done some officer safety and deadly force scenarios. And I got to tell you, they killed the suspect, you know, the suspect role players, you know, when we would never do something like under scenarios where we would never do that, right? And they get so scared that they just, you know, you give them a gun and all of a sudden they just change.
right. Well, and that's, and not only that, but they were amazed at the results of some of these tests that we've put them through. And it totally changed their thinking about
that. Was a good thing. Yes. You're absolutely right. I mean, I won't mention any of the networks, yeah. You know, personally.
Well, they don't always report them correctly either. Oh, well, I mean,
you've been with me so many times when we've been in the car and we get those calls from the media, you know, hey, Dr. Martinelli, what about this and that, right? And they switch everything around.
They switch it all around. Yeah, and that's just amazing to me. It's very frustrating.
Well, you know, and police officers do make mistakes, okay? But the level of mistakes that police officers make in comparison to how the mainstream media pulls them out is far in a way, you know, one-sided against the police. So speaking of this, because you got me on a roll,
okay.
I want to talk about this officer in Seattle, Washington, that gets suspended for tackling a man who was agitated and had gone into an REI store and stolen an ice pick, right? You know what an ice pick is?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a climbing pick, right?
Yeah.
So it's got like a little bit of a hatchet or like a, you know, a pick part. The other side is like really, really sharp.
Like an axe or something.
Yeah, well, yeah. One part of it is kind of like an axe, mm-hmm. And the other part of it is like an ice pick, right? Only a big, thick ice pick.
Right, that could probably hurt you.
Oh, that could kill you. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. So anyway, this homeless guy goes into an REI store, and he goes to the climbing section, he grabs an ice pick, and he simply just walks out of the store. So the police are called, and the police confront this guy, and they're trying to de-escalate, they're trying to talk with him, they're trying to tell him to put the ice pick down. The guy's clearly agitated, and what he does is he turns around. It's almost like one of those deadly force scenarios, right?
Right.
That we do at the academy. And he just turns around and he's non-compliant. He just starts walking down the street, but he's walking down the street. He's agitated and he's swinging the ice pick. So the rhetorical question is, what do these cops do, right? And how long do they follow this guy? So anyway, they follow him. They're talking to him. They got great body cam footage of this. And they follow him for six blocks. And one of the officers, as he's getting towards a bunch of other people, because it's daytime, he's at downtown, so there's people all around. He's starting to get closer to other people. This officer sees that the guy's distracted, and he takes an opportunity, and he tackles this guy, and he actually braces him up against the wall. Doesn't hurt him. The guy's not injured.
What a great move.
Okay, and the guy is immediately disarmed. He's taken to the ground, and he's handcuffed. End of story. And that police officer's own supervisor basically files an internal affairs complaint against this guy.
Wow.
And it goes in, and he gets so-called investigated, and he gets suspended. And the reason that I'm understanding that they gave is that he didn't, quote, de-escalate enough. Well, you know, I teach de-escalation all over the country, for God's sakes. Hey, you can't de-escalate forever. There are some times where people are agitated, they're chaotic, they're under the influence of drugs, they're crazy, all of the above, and they've got a deadly weapon, and they're moving towards other people, and it creates such a situation of exigency that if you have an opportunity to end this quickly without any violence, without any injury to the person, and you take that, you're a hero in my book.
Well, and you know, he's a hero in my book because he didn't shoot him. He didn't tase him.
Right.
He didn't take a baton out and hit him.
And he would have been justified in all of those things. Except for the shooting, right? I mean, using the taser, using the chemical agent, using the baton.
Exactly. So he took an action, and he gets punished for it. And this happens way too often. And it's just very unfair and very frustrating. And it's because of the climate that we're in right now with police, that everybody's so oversensitive about everything. And we have to be politically correct, and we have to make sure of this and sure of that. But the people that are making these decisions often are not people that have ever been in these situations.
Well, you know, Seattle, Washington, and you know I do a lot of work up in Washington and Oregon, and Seattle, Washington specifically is becoming some sort of social criminal justice experiment.
That's what we need.
Well, you know, sweetheart, you don't know this, but, you know, just a couple of months ago, they changed, from my understanding, they changed their use of force policy and put in these very dangerous words, proportional force. Do you know what that means?
Oh, I do know what that means. Yes, you can only use the same force that's being used against you. So if somebody's hitting you, you can only hit them. Somebody is hitting you with a baseball bat, you can only hit them with a baseball
bat.
That's
exactly right. And you know that is not what the federal guidelines are for use of force.
No.
Okay, they're not at all.
And if you think about it, it's patently ridiculous.
Well, it is, because our job, when we're forced to use force, and you said it just a couple of minutes ago, sweetheart, that officers only use force 1 to 2% of the time. Okay? 1 to 2% of the time. But our job is to overcome the resistance. And when you just trade punch for punch, it becomes so much more dangerous. So that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, well, I agree with you, and I'm ready for a cup of coffee.
And I want a cookie.
Oh, okay.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
The out-and-out perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out-loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, honey, here's your coffee, and you have a choice of cookies. Which one would you like?
I want that oatmeal raisin cookie.
Then I'll get the chocolate chip.
Okay.
Okay.
So anyway, I just... I'm beating my head against the wall again. I just see...
You keep doing that.
You see all the lumps in that head? I can't believe it. Okay, where's the thought process? The state of New Jersey, the governor just okayed that illegal aliens can apply for and receive state funding for tuition for colleges. Okay? And, you know, I was just talking to our son, one of our boys, right? And who remained nameless, okay? But I'm talking to him, and, you know, he's just finishing up his master's degree, right, in forensics. God bless him, forensic science. And I'm asking him, so, I'm helping him a little bit from time to time, but I'm going like, so what are those student loans up to, right? And he goes, oh, my God, I'm up to about like $70,000. Thank God he's going to graduate real soon. And I'm going like, that's rough. And, you know, one of our employees... I was talking with her the other day, and her student loans are about the same thing. And of course, she's got a master's degree in forensics, right? And these guys, nobody's helping these guys out. These are, you know, things that they applied for themselves. And so all of a sudden they get free tuition, or they get opportunities to apply for loans, but at low percentages, not the ones that, you know, that our son and my employee have applied for. They're much higher.
Yeah, I really disagree with this whole thing, because I understand the concept that we want to give people an opportunity to learn and to move forward in life. But what do we not understand in this country about the word illegal? If you come in here legally, and then you can have all the rights that we all enjoy here, and you can have loans and so forth. But when you come in illegally, you should have none of the same, enjoy the same things that we that are legal enjoy. I just think that that's really unfair.
Well, it is unfair, and you feel so bad for these kids, right? Because where do you think that money comes from? Okay, it's going to come from them. You know, it's coming from us. It's coming from all of us right now. But after we leave this earth, it's going to be coming from them. And these kids are going to be so overburdened in debt, you know. And for what? For what reason? But, you know, I know you've got a lot of bones to pick with the school systems.
Well, and let me just say to you, because, you know, I do pick on the school system a lot. But I love the teachers. I think so many teachers are wonderful with the kids, and they inspire them. I still remember, and I know you do because we've talked about it.
I remember my high school teachers better than I remember my college professors.
Right, and I remember even my, I actually even remember my kindergarten teacher. So teachers have a huge impact. But it's the administration of our school districts and of our education system that really, really bothers me. And I am really glad that Betsy DeVos is in there. However, they just treat her terribly.
You know, I'm not hearing much about her.
Well, she, and by the way, she has the she's the first Secretary of Education that has an armed contingency following her around, because she has so many death threats just for trying to make our educational system better for our kids.
That's disgraceful.
It
you
is
know
disgraceful.
You come and you sacrifice your time and your energy, and you know, I mean, you know, the psychology of it and the emotions and everything to sacrifice for your country at a much lower pay scale than you would get in private enterprise or in private practice, and you do that to get back to your country, and you just get vilified for it.
Oh, absolutely. And she is definitely trying to make things better, but she's, again, just like President Trump, she's roadblocked in every way that they can roadblock her. But my kind of bone to pick on this whole thing right now is with the educators that are making the decision, the administrators that are making the decisions about what our kids learn right now. They are learning things and not learning things. So let's take some examples. Phonics. Phonics was really a bedrock of how we all learned to read way back when. And a lot of the schools now have had phonics taken out, and they've gone to this... I don't even know what they call it, but it's like take a word and just sound it out, and that's what you're supposed to do. And it's not phonics, and it's hurt our kids' education tremendously. And one of our boys went through that when he was in school, where they took the phonics out, and he really had a hard time with that. And I saw firsthand how that decision made a difference. But it's not just phonics. Now we don't have cursive handwriting anymore. So we're no longer teaching kids how to do cursive handwriting like we all did.
And you know, cursive handwriting is so important, okay, because you can't always have a computer with you, right? You can't always be
Correct.
Texting and typing something in. Sometimes you need to do things in both longhand, in shorthand, and in good printing, okay? And it tells a lot about the person. You know, their handwriting. And I'll tell you what, I don't know about your mom, but my Italian mom used to just beat it into me. And I'm just being kidding. But she just stressed it so much in our house that we learn, especially the cursive writing, that we learn, and she had beautiful handwriting. And she impressed that upon me. And
well, it's a beautiful art that we should not lose. And it's also, our signature is our signature, you know. Those are important things in life, and why we're taking that away. And here's the point: the people that are making these decisions to take these things out, including taking history out of the history books, changing the history books so that they're politically correct, changing the color of people in the history books, changing things that happen so that it becomes politically correct, I absolutely disagree with, and I want our students and our kids taught the true history of this country, taught the things that they need to know, like reading and writing and arithmetic, which
the fundamentals. And you know what? I want to say something because mm-hmm. you know I used to be a U.S. history teacher, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, I couldn't agree with you more. The stuff that they're teaching now doesn't even resemble the true history of the United States.
No.
It's this inclusivity, politically correct, everybody involved. They skip over a lot of stuff, and they misrepresent a lot of things that happened in the history of this nation, which are so important.
Which tells me that the people that are making these decisions, because it's not the parents that have the kids in schools.
Right.
The parents are working, they're trusting that the schools are doing their job, and really, they can't anymore. They can't trust that they're doing their job. But it's these administrators with their own agenda who are now doing things like taking the Pledge of Allegiance out at the beginning of the day, taking prayer out, changing the history books, taking cursive out, taking some of the fundamentals of education out, where nobody can do a math problem in their head anymore. I mean, I certainly learned how to do, I can do almost any math problem in my head because it was drilled into me over and over in school.
And you know what? You're so right about the fundamentals, especially with the math, because that equates to counting, right? How many times have you been to like McDonald's or some fast food restaurant, and they're doing the thing electronically, and you say to the guy, I don't know if you've ever done this. I've done it, and I've said, can you count the change out for me?
No, they can't do it.
The girl does is that she looks at what, because the machine tells her automatically how much change to give. And she goes, yes, I'm going to give you $3.85. But she doesn't know how to do it, you know, like 85,
right,
90,
right.
You know,
yeah, they don't
2,
know how
3,
to do
4,
that
and 5.
Anymore.
She doesn't know how to do that.
But nor do they know how to balance a checkbook, or
right.
nor do they know how
Oh, wait a minute. I'm guilty. I'm
well,
guilty
I know,
because
I have
myself.
To balance yours for you. But these are things that are basic things that people should know if they're going to protect themselves down the road, you know, from being taken advantage of in different ways with
right.
money. So, but it's not one thing. It's so many different things, Ron, that they have taken away from the schools and our kids. And we need to be cognizant that this is happening and not allow it to happen. So parents need to really, really make a stand here about bringing back education to kids. And they also took all the trade skills out of schools. And we need those trade skills.
Well, you know, I want you to talk about that for a second, because I had a couple of words on that too. But I want to just take us back for a minute, sweetheart, because one of the things to me which is extremely important, and I'm going to tell you why it's important, because it's downright dangerous, is that they have taken, and I don't think a lot of people know this, because when we talk to our friends, they don't know it, and they've taken civics out of school. right? So how governments work, what the rule of law is all about, what your rights are, right? You know, I mean, what they are, and more importantly, what they're not. And that's where I see on the law enforcement side, you see so much resistance against the police, because people think, and I'm seeing this with adults, which is disgraceful, where people think that they have rights that they don't have. It's just horrible. But I want you to talk about the trades, because that's something that resonates with me.
Well, and I agree on the civics. I mean, civics is something that should be put in every school tomorrow. It's critical to all of our students, and they have a right to know how our country works and why. And those are important things that we need to maintain America going forward. As far as the trades, you know, everybody nowadays is being told that college is the be-all, end-all of everything. Right? Everybody needs to go to college. And by the way, I'm not impressed with the colleges for the most part, because really all they are is liberal bastions anymore.
Well, you saw that study that just came out a couple of weeks ago that said 45% of all kids that graduate from college don't even work in the area that they're that they majored in. They don't even get a job in that area.
Well, you know, back in the day, they used to ask us, remember, everybody used to ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, you know, my answer always, I was probably a little smart little kid, you know, smart mouth little kid. And I said, I don't know. I mean, how do you expect me to know? I'm 12 years old. I don't know what I want to be, you know, but people tend, they should be going to things that they are good at and enjoy doing. But instead, we're pushing everybody to go to college, and they take the most ridiculous masters and the most ridiculous classes in college that will never do anything for your life. We need, in this country, we need our trades back. We will always need plumbers. Everybody goes to the bathroom every day. We need plumbers. We need toilets. We need sinks. We need water. We need
electricians.
Electricians. We need
contractors.
Contractors. We need people that can build things properly and that don't fall apart.
Well, you know,
bridges just, that don't fall apart.
You know, it just blew me away. I went back many years ago. I went back to my old high school. In my high school, we had all of the trades. We had wood shop. We had auto shop. We had electrical shop. We had a plumbing and air conditioning shop. And you know, I never took any of those things. And I'll tell you what, I regret it now, because I can barely hammer a nail in. But we had those things, and the kids loved them. And I went back, to that section of the high school where all those, you know, those buildings used to be, and they were all gone. And I was asking one of the teachers, I said, what happened to wood shop? What happened to auto shop? It's all gone.
See, I think that that's so sad, because everybody is not cut out by a little cookie cutter, and people should do what their passion is in life. And some people's passion is working with their hands, or is working with, you know, in the medical field, or is working with plumbing, or whatever it is. You know, maybe they're working the land, maybe they're working on cars or tractors or whatever, airplanes. We need all of those skills. And we're losing those skills because everybody needs to go to college and learn how to do tech stuff. And that's so not true. And what I would encourage people to do that have kids these days is people need to figure out where they're happiest. Because unless you have a happy job, and unless you're doing something that fulfills you, whatever that is, you're going to have a terrible life. And I don't care how smart or not smart you are. You need to do something that you're passionate about. You need to wake up with a passion to do what you do every day. And that seems to me to be what we're missing right now. In all the things that we've done in education, we've taken that passion out of kids for what they love to do. And telling them what they should do.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. There's a lot of lost souls in college that really have no business being there. They have no idea why they're there. You know,
for
here's what I got when I was teaching at the university. I get, why are you here? You know, you're not engaged in my class. You don't look like you're having fun. I'm here because my mom and dad expect me to be here. Well, that's not why you want to be here, because you're just wasting your mom and dad's money, and you're wasting your time. And I used to say, look, just like you said, Lynn, I said, why don't you just get out of here? And if you want me to talk with your mom and dad, I'll talk with your mom and dad. Why don't you go out and get yourself a street education, right, and see what it's like without this education? And if you find that you need a specific education, no matter what it is, follow your heart and do what like you said, do what makes you happy. Because, you know, I learned a long time ago, if you do something that you really, really like and enjoy, you'll never work a day in your life.
Well, and that's true. And people that don't have any direction about what they're doing, they are the ones who are easy to manipulate into, you know, things like, I don't know, that isn't that how the Marxist system works? Where where you have people that don't have a firm direction in life, and so they're easy to sway. And I don't want to see that for our kids. I want our kids to have a good, strong foundation. And I think parents need to pay attention to what is happening in their kids' school and what they are studying and what they're not studying, and make a stand and say something.
You know, I absolutely agree with you. And that's exactly where we need to go in this country. So I'm going to have another sip of coffee.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, this is your last cup of coffee. Now that you're all cookied up, you should be doing well.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, there is a story about these three women dentists that I just love in North Carolina. And the three women, they went to college and they all became dentists. And they were kind of struggling to, you know, get their businesses on the road, and they remained friends, and they decided to team up. So 9 years ago, they teamed up and they all started one office, and they put out the cutest ads. You have to see these ads about their teeth whitening and their services and so forth. And the three of them, first of all, they're really pretty ladies, and they all get together in these ads, and they dress up as maybe a construction worker or a referee, that type of thing. And so they recently put an ad out for their teeth whitening. And it says, everyone smiles in the same language.
Okay.
And the three women are wearing different costumes. One is wearing a Scottish costume, and one is wearing an Indian costume, and one is wearing a Chinese kimono.
Okay. A Japanese kimono.
Oh, I'm sorry. A Japanese kimono. Well, see, what do I know? And they have been just excoriated in the press for this.
Why?
Just absolutely excoriated, especially by this Midtown magazine, which printed the ad in it. And they called it ignorant and offensive.
Why?
And I don't know why. Because they're wearing some sort of cultural garb. So now they're ignorant and offensive. Where actually, I think it's the cutest ad.
Well, wait a minute. Are they saying, the people saying that they're offending the culture of the nation that has the garb that they're wearing? Like they're offending Japanese people or Indian people or, I mean, whomever? I mean, what's the deal behind
that? Well, I honestly don't know what they're saying. as to why this is offensive, because I see nothing offensive about it. I think it's a very cute ad.
Is it the same kind of deal that happened recently with the high school girl that went to the prom and was wearing the Asian dress, you know, the high neck?
Absolutely.
Right, with the slit up the leg, those beautiful Asian dresses.
Right, and everybody came down against her. And
but not Asian people.
But not Asian people. People from China actually said that it was beautiful, and thank you so much for honoring them.
I saw her on television with the dress, and she was absolutely gorgeous in that dress. I thought she really, I thought she was stunning. I thought she really made the dress look good.
She did. And these ladies are, first of all, the ad is very cute. And you know what? Everyone does smile in the same language.
I absolutely agree.
That is such a good message. And instead of seeing a good message in this, they pulled the ad and they...
You're kidding me.
No, they won't even let it play.
Wait a minute. Not the dentist pulled the ad, the magazine.
The magazine
pulled the ad. Incredible.
And apologized. And these female dentists had to apologize for... learning a lesson about being ignorant and offensive, and neither of those are true. That's just, they shouldn't have even apologized. They should have stuck up for themselves. But I understand what people do to your business when they think that you're doing something that's offensive.
Okay, so sweetheart, I got to ask you something, because it sounds like a woman thing, right? What do you think as a woman is behind something like this? Because I can't wrap my hands around it.
No, I don't think that this is a woman thing. I think that this is just this whole... Back to the same thing, Ron. Politically correct. We're overly politically correct. And this shaming that we're doing of people for anything like this, for doing an ad wearing some cultural garb is ridiculous. I would actually think that it would be a compliment.
I would, too. And, you know, it's interesting because I brought up the fact on the girl that was a high school girl, that was actually cyberbullying. What they were doing, this is probably some of that, too.
It's
a form of cyberbullying. And you remember on my show, A Threat of Evidence on America Out Loud, you remember we did that whole, that was our first show, I think,
right.
that we did on cyberbullying.
Right.
It's so damaging to the psyche. And, you know, you brought something up that I agree with, and that's potentially damaging to their business.
Well, it is, and that, I'm sure, is why they apologize, even though I don't think that they needed to, but I understand why they would, because when you have people coming after you like this, they've got their claws out, and they want to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And again, why are people butting in like this to other people's lives?
I don't know.
I'm done with that subject, but that was upsetting. Let's go on to happy news.
Well, let's
do it. I have happy news, and so do you.
I want to hear all about it. Go ahead. You're going to talk about your sister.
I can talk about my sister. So I told you I wanted to talk about my sister tonight because I learned some things that I didn't know. And, you know, my sister, Lisa Garrison, raises Great Danes. And, oh my gosh, when we go to their house, it's crazy. You've got five Great Danes, and they're so humongous, and they bark so loud. But they're as
they are as big as horses.
They are.
You know, I've seen a lot of Great Danes. I've never seen Great Danes that are as big as Lisa and John's Great Danes. Those are huge Great Danes. But, you know, I know you're going to brag on Lisa because she is such an accomplished dog trainer.
Well, here's the thing, and here is why Lisa is one of my heroes of the day. John and Lisa had a little boy, and by the way, they have three children, but their first child was born with cerebral palsy, and he was finally, towards the end of his life, he was in a home taking care of him, and one day a woman walked by the door, and she had a Great Dane with her, and she asked if Lisa would like the dog to come and visit her son, Eric. And Lisa said, you know, really, Eric wouldn't know that the dog is here. And the lady said to her, the dog is not just for him, it's for you too.
Oh, how interesting.
She came in and visited, and Lisa really saw the value of that dog and how gentle it was with her son. And her son did pass, and she decided to get herself a Great Dane. So she did get a Great Dane, and she trained that dog to be a dog that could go visit the elderly and people in hospice. and she took the dog, and for many years she visited people in hospice, and she never told anybody and she never took any credit, but she brought a lot of happiness to people in hospice.
Wonderful and, gesture.
And the people, you know, when you see a dog, you almost can't help but smile. I mean, I'm such a dog lover, and so are you, and you just have to smile because dogs make you happy. So she brought that happiness to a lot of people. And in learning how to train that dog by herself, she then got another dog. And that dog had some colorings that was great for show. So she trained herself to train those dogs how to be show dogs. So like in the kennel associations right. and so forth, I'm not a dog trainer person, as you know, with our dog. and nor are you. So we can't speak to training dogs very well. But
I think we put out a little bit of money to have our dog trained.
But she taught herself how to train these dogs, and she has now had 5 generations of Great Danes.
I see her on Facebook all the time. She wins everything that's out there.
She does.
My God.
And this year she won the largest Great Dane show in the country, and her number 10th in the country dog, Glory, just had 9 babies.
I saw the
mantles,
pictures.
Too.
I saw John.
All of them mantles. That was crazy.
With the puppies.
But the thing is that here's a woman who taught herself this skill about training these animals and making every generation of them champions, where most people who are in those shows have their dogs trained by professional trainers.
That's what she said. Yeah, I thought that was so interesting.
Yep, and now, so when she has a batch of puppies, literally, it's easier to buy your first home than it is to buy a puppy from her.
Oh, I know.
Because she really cares where those dogs go. She doesn't let a dog go to somebody who is a just a dog owner. They must be somebody who wants a member of the family, and that dog will be treated that way. So she does a lot of research.
Yeah, and you know, those dogs have such lineage now because she is such a champion dog breeder that she really takes ownership of every single potential, customer, I guess, that would come in and apply. They have to actually apply to get one of her dogs.
Right, and what's so cute about this litter that they have right now is that they wanted a boy dog to keep, and they got a boy dog, but there was 9 puppies, and only one was a boy. So
seriously,
they had eight girls and one
I
boy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but you know, here's what my version of a hero is: always an ordinary person doing extraordinary things, and she's done extraordinary things with the dogs and helping other people, and in enjoying them for herself and making champions out of them.
So, well, I just
she's
think that's
my hero.
It's amazing.
Kudos to Lisa and John.
Absolutely. So I've got a hero of the day.
Good.
As a matter of fact, I got a couple of them.
Okay.
So Michigan State Trooper Eric Gantert. And so this is a story that really could have been an absolute tragedy. And thank God for Trooper Gantert. So here's a 7-year-old boy in Mendon, Michigan, and he's out at a park, and he's with a friend, and he's with his brother and his sister, and they're playing next to the St. Joseph River. And they decide that they're going to put their feet in the water in the St. Joseph River, okay? But, you know, it's springtime, right? So the, you know, rivers is flowing pretty good.
Yeah.
And this boy couldn't swim. Anyway, he falls in the river, and thank God his sister grabbed his arm, but the current is pulling him underwater, and the little girl is not strong enough to pull him out of the water, but she is strong enough to hold him, okay?
Thank goodness.
And so
for that.
She's screaming, go get help, and so the little friend, he goes and runs and goes talks with the father, and they called the police right away, and then Trooper Gantert showed up, and he gets right out to the river right away, and of course he's strong enough to pull that little boy out of the water completely, but the boy had been underwater for 7 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so you know what that can do, right? And so Trooper Gantert immediately started CPR on this kid and worked on him and worked on him and worked on him till the ambulance came, and actually worked on him with CPR with one of the paramedics all the way to the hospital. And they got, as they were getting to the hospital, the kid started getting his color back, got into the ER, and they managed to save the life of this little boy. No anoxic brain injury that anybody's talking about. And, I mean, what a phenomenal, heroic thing to do.
And another unsung hero that I'm happy that we're talking about.
Every day. So my next hero of the day is Deputy Jeremy Nix of Florida. And this is another life-saving story. A mother and either a sister or a friend were driving down the highway, and they've got a little, the mother had a little three-month-old child by the name of Kingston. And all of a sudden, I don't know the reason, but all of a sudden he developed acute respiratory distress where he couldn't breathe. The mother had pulled over to the side of the highway, got out, and started waving people down. And Deputy Nix was on his way. He was off duty in his patrol car on his way back to the station. Saw the woman, pulled over right away, talked with the woman, ran up to the driver's and passenger seat of the car, grabbed the little child, took him out. There's actually video of it. It's a dash cam video. It's amazing. And put the boy down on the ground and immediately started assessing and doing CPR to this boy. And he saved that little boy's life. Kingston is alive today because of Deputy Jeremy Nix. So,
and he was off duty.
Off duty on his way back to the station. Didn't have to stop.
But of course he did.
Well, of course you're going to stop,
of course.
Right? Who's not going to stop? You're in uniform, right? But anyway, so my hat's off to both of these guys. And, you know, every single day we have police officers and deputy sheriffs and state troopers and highway patrol and other first responder that save innumerable lives every single day. And it's just good to know that we have those people out there that have got our back.
Well, absolutely. And I have one, just a quick one for you. You know, and there's no names in my story because I don't know the names, but I did see the video from the body cam of the officer. Again, it's officers. So there was a woman driving, and she fell asleep in the car, and she drove headlong into a pond. That was in, and this is in Sugarland, Texas.
Oh, by the Louisiana border.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So the pond had what?
Crocodiles.
Crocodiles. And snakes. So we have snakes in Texas, and we don't have crocodiles where we are, but they do have them over by the Louisiana border. So crocodiles and snakes, or alligators, whichever they are. And she's in there in her Jeep, and it's sinking.
Oh, my God.
So she wakes up, and she's sinking in this pond, and the officers come, three of them, and they have their body cams on. Three of them jumped right into that alligator-infested water.
Yikes.
In the dark, and got over to her vehicle, broke the window out, extracted her, and rescued her. But I'll tell you what, I'd have had to really think twice. I'd have done it, but I had to really think twice about getting in water with alligators. That would really terrify me.
Well, you know our paramedic firefighter son, Rudy, right? Mm-hmm. Scared of snakes, scared of gators, scared of large bugs.
He'd have done it.
Okay, so that would have been one for him, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you going to go in there, Rudy, or what?
No, you know what? He'd have thought about it later and been shaking maybe, but and then sometimes that's how it happens. The adrenaline kicks in later.
I can't tease about Rudy. He saved so many lives. The guy's got medals up the wazoo.
Yeah.
I mean, so proud of him.
I am proud of him.
Well, listen, I'm cookied out and I'm coffeed out, and I'm going to call it a day. How about you get the dishes and I'll put the dogs to bed and I'll meet you there.
Okay, you got it.
Okay,
love
I love you, sweetheart.